Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 1, Interview with Jeff Schultz. Hi, this is Tim.
And this is Gina. And this is the podcast that educates, entertains, and excites you about dog sledding.
What is this, the 3E podcast or the
That's
Sled Dog
right.
podcast?
That's right. Educate, entertain, excite. You
hey,
got it.
Well, welcome today. Today we're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Jeff Schultz. If you've ever opened a magazine about dog sledding or any kind of brochures, you've probably seen Jeff's name. He's a photographer from Alaska who takes absolutely incredible pictures. And Jeff was kind enough to give us an interview and tell us a little bit about how he got into photography and how he got into taking pictures of the Iditarod and dog sledding in general. We're also going to be talking today, put a shout out to everybody that would be part of the community-based podcast that we're doing.
Tim, help me out there with the community-focused podcast. What does that really mean?
Well, it's basically the idea that a lot of podcasts are out there talking about an expert, just sharing their ideas and sharing their thoughts. But we have found that in this sport that it's not just one person that's the expert. It's everybody's got a characteristic or qualities that we'd like to learn from. So we're putting this podcast together, and we're putting a shout-out to anybody that would like to help share the knowledge that they have about dog sledding, mushing, working dogs, and really being able to share that information. So we are putting a shout-out, or actually a call-out, to anybody that says you would love to share with the community about the food you use. Maybe you're a vendor because you loved it so much, you're becoming a food vendor.
Puppies, maybe raising puppies.
You have a kennel and you've got new ideas. You're looking to sell puppies but have a unique breed, maybe a supple of puppies or something that you want to share. Or maybe you are a wannabe podcaster and would love to interview folks for us out there in the field. So maybe somebody in Alaska has a friend or somebody down the road that's a musher and would love to interview them, and we'll put them on the podcast. So that's what a community-based podcast is.
Okay.
It's not just about us. It's about the community and hearing from them and doing the interviews like the one with Jeff today. So it's kind of fun.
So anybody that would love to contact us, please do so. You can get a hold of us, obviously, at our website, www.sleddogpodcast.com, or at sleddog@vbs20.com.
Yep.
Is that it, Tim?
sleddog@vbs20.com. Or just off our website, you can find the link to our email on that website. For part of the podcast today, we wanted to start off by telling you a little bit about our story about getting into dog sledding. It wasn't any grandiose plan. We didn't have a big strategy to get into it. We never had relatives in it. We are just basic folks out in the middle part of this, you know, United States into Michigan, and loved the sport by way of our children. And we have a daughter that got us into it by watching the movie Snow Dogs. We all fell in love with the look and the characteristics of the Siberian Husky, and she convinced us to go out and start shopping for them. So we picked up a couple, and within a few years, we had five or six Huskies, I guess Siberian Huskies and Alaskan Huskies mixed, and we started going to races, and we really kind of laugh at our first race, and Gina's going to tell us a story about our first race with our first experience in the chute.
That's right, Tim. So this is our first show, so we wanted to talk about our first race that we actually went to after just dog sledding around our area and doing our own thing. We actually entered the older daughter in a race because she had to be 10 to race. So here we are. We show up in Baldwin, Michigan, and I, as the mother, am quite nervous. Now, we all know how to dog sled at this point, but we could only bring three dogs to the race, and so we opted that Elizabeth could be the one to race. But believe me, I wanted to race, too. I don't know if Tim did or not.
Oh, big time.
But we let Elizabeth do it, and we thought she had some pretty competitive dogs, but we really had no idea what she was going to do. So the first day, good enough. You know, she gets out, shoots out, and goes really fast. And she had to make a right turn pretty quickly.
Yeah, maybe there's a
200
fast G.
feet or so. Fast G. You know, so we told her to, you know, keep it slow. Keep them slow going out. Make sure you get your right okay. You don't want to. And so she abided by that. And as she took off, I was able to kind of run down the incoming trail so that I could follow her, because I I'm like, here goes my daughter off into the woods. It was a really fun experience for me, but I had butterflies. I was praying. I was doing everything. And as I made it up to the point where she had made her right, she went off. And then soon enough, she made another haw into the woods. And there she was gone. And about 6 minutes later, she came back. She had to pass and do everything, but she was pretty excited that she had done well. And now this is our daughter who's shyer, more demure. She's just not real aggressive. And she got on that sled and turned into somebody else, didn't she, Tim?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, she's totally like, okay, Mom, I passed two people and I this and I that. And, you know, and every 10 minutes we had to go look at the scoreboard to see if the scores were up. And I just thought, who is this kid? So that was all fine. Now we race on Saturday and then we race again on Sunday. So we waited around a little bit, kind of met some people of this particular club to see if we even wanted to join the club after this first race. And soon enough, we found out she was in first. And we were shocked, and she was elated. She was just, like, on fire. I never saw her like that. So that was cool. We were feeling pretty good, and we packed up our stuff. This particular race is only about 35 or 40 minutes from our home. So we went on home that night and came back the next morning, and we were all ready to go. And I kind of warned her. I said, you know, you're acting and feeling a little confident. So make sure you don't take that first leg too fast. You've got to make that first G. I won't, Mom. But, you know, we also had told her, you know, she went out first because she was in first. All you got to do is run this. And don't let anybody pass you. And if no one passes you, you pretty much are going to hold your first place position. And she said, okay, Mom. And good enough, man. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. She shoots out so fast, and I thought, slow down, girl, slow down. And I run up because I'm just as nervous and I want to see her out. And as I'm clearing the trees, running up the path, I can see my daughter running. And so there was one gal who was trail help at the end there, and I'm kind of screaming as I'm trying to run through deep snow, is she running? And the lady nods her head. She says, yeah, she lost her sled. And my heart just is, blah. And I'm trying to run faster. So good enough she had gone too fast. Good enough she did lose her sled on that first G. And here I'm watching this demure, shy 10-year-old daughter. She is just hoofing it to catch up to her sled. And good enough her...
Well, don't tell them how. But she runs up to the sled and she jumps on the sled.
Yeah,
and
she's screaming, whoa. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the sled does stop enough before it heads off into the woods. And that little girl jumps on her sled, throws her snow hook into place on the sled, and off she goes in time enough because number two guy is just starting to clear that first G as well. And then, boop, she was off into the woods. And I'm just standing there going, I just couldn't believe it. I was so in shock because here this child, she didn't stop. She didn't cry. She just picked herself up, ran after that sled, jumped on that sled, readjusted herself, and went hike.
Well, the best part about it, I think, was when you ran up there, you told me the story that the lady, the wonderful lady that was trail help, looked over at you and says, wow, your dogs, do they know whoa? And we didn't really know what she meant by that until later when our daughter comes back and she tells us a story that what had happened is the sled bounced off the wall, guardrail kind of thing, and fell, and she lost her sled. Well, the snow hook came loose, and as she was yelling, whoa, the snow hook actually grabbed the ground and stopped. So she was able to run up and jump on the sled and keep going. And so this lady thought that our dogs were just trained so well that we say, whoa, and they stop on a dime. So it was pretty impressive to
think
that. Right,
but really what had stopped the sled was the snow hook.
So it was fun.
So anyway, good enough. When she came back about 6 minutes later, the first words out of her mouth was not, Mom, I lost my sled. Mom, I mean, because she didn't really know that I was behind her, knowing that she was there. Not, Mom. Anything about that, the first thing she said was, no one passed me. So she just wanted that first place trophy.
So, bottom line, in the next couple weeks, we're going to be talking about how to identify puppies and how a good puppy will run and how to identify puppies when they're young, if they're going to be a good runner, and different things. But more importantly is how to identify the children that can run,
yeah.
or the children have that power and that competitive spirit to pick up and
them,
do.
Preparing them for anything that can happen on a dog sled in the middle of the woods.
So here's what we're going to do is next few minutes, we're going to be playing an interview that we have with Jeff Schultz. I apologize for the quality of the podcast. We did it over the phone, over long distance, and we couldn't really get a good connection that day. So it's a little bit quiet, so you may have to turn up a little bit, and I hope we don't go back and forth with loud and quiet too much throughout the podcast. But a wonderful man, wonderful business that he's in, and I think he has done more for the sport of showing the world what dog sledding and mushing is all about than almost anybody. He has just been in the right positions in the right time, and he's really worked hard at being the person that can see and help us all visualize not only the Iditarod, but also the dog sledding community altogether. So this interview goes about 20 minutes or so, but it's absolutely wonderful.
And if you're thinking, who is Jeff Schultz? I tell you what, you pick up any mushing magazine, look at any site.
Any brochure,
and you look at who took the picture, and good enough, it'll probably be Jeff Schultz. So you do know him, you just didn't realize it, but now you'll get to hear his voice and hear his story, which is awesome.
So again, if you want to go to our website at www.sleddogpodcast.com, which you might already be there, but if you take a look at the show notes, you'll see all the links to find his wonderful pictures. He's got hundreds, if not thousands, of pictures on the websites that he has to help us understand what he does and the wonderful work. And you can buy prints, you can grab your favorite prints and order them and bring them home, and it'd be just absolutely a wonderful collection for anybody.
Great.
So here's the interview.
Hey, well, thank you, Jeff, for joining us today. And Jeff, to start us out, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where do you live? And if obviously you're doing this full time, probably, but tell us about that.
Sure. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. Have been since I was 18 years old, back in 1978 when I moved up from California to my. Wanted to build a log cabin, live off the land, and live the Alaska dream. Now, after quite a few years up here, I own a stock photo agency called Alaska Stock Images, where we represent about 150 photographers and sell their work for all types of commercial applications, advertising, magazines, etc. And then I still continue to be a photographer myself, but not quite as much as I used to. But the nice thing that I've kept going since 1981 is photographing the Iditarod each year. So that's my main sources of income, is stock photography and shooting assignments.
So Jeff, why do you do what you do? Is it something that you grew up loving photography, or is it something you just got back into when you moved to Alaska?
No, I've been wanting to be a photographer since I picked up the camera when I was in seventh grade. A friend of mine brought into our school his brother's 35mm Pentax single lens reflex camera. And I thought that was the coolest thing going compared to my old point shoot 126 type camera, which nobody probably remembers. But I do it because I love it. It's a God-given talent that I just see a picture pretty much wherever I go. I was out hiking last night with my wife, and we're just walking along. I didn't even have a camera, but I'm constantly looking for what would make a nice composition. So I just enjoy it. I've been blessed with the talent that I not only enjoy, but I can make a living in.
That's awesome. And I had to ask, think in the back of my head is, when you're out there and you see those shots without your camera, does it just completely, like, flabbergast you, or are you like...
Right. Sometimes it can, but this, I've been doing it long enough where there'll be another opportunity somewhere down the road. So not as big a deal.
Well, Jeff, what is your current passion in photography or in life?
Well, in life, my current passion is getting closer to God and to help others get closer to their families. In life, my passion is teaching fathers how to be better fathers to their sons, because that's what I am real interested in. I've been doing that for a number of years through our church. In photography, my passion is just finding a great image. Because I've been doing it for so long, there always used to be a dollar sign, or there had to be a dollar sign behind the photo. Nowadays, it's not so much. You know, I'm just as happy going out there shooting pictures that nobody will ever see, that I'll just enjoy photographing while I'm out there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that is our passion also. So we're very excited to hear that. Is it, you know, I guess you shot the Iditarod, was that in, what year was that? Is it in 82 or 81, you said?
81 was the first year I photographed it, yeah. I've been everyone since. I've been to the finish line, everyone, except in 1992 when I was in a plane crash 3/4 of the way into the race. I had it backed out, so... yep, been the official photographer since 1982, and like I said, I've photographed each one since.
Oh, that is fantastic. Now, when you say that, when you say you're the official photographer, do you have multiple people shooting the event, but you actually kind of coordinate everybody?
Well, as the official photographer, what that is I'm a volunteer, just like the vets are and the ham radio operators and all those types of people that work the race. So I volunteer my time and talent to further the cause of the Iditarod. Right now, for the last 7 years, I've been the only official photographer. There was two of us for many years, Jim Brown. He was an older gentleman, passed away just 2 years ago, and had not photographed the race in the latter years because of his health. But in any case, there are... There's plenty of other photographers out there photographing, but they're on assignment for Associated Press or for the newspapers or something like that. I go along and photograph it for the Iditarod Committee, again as a volunteer. The nice thing is that as part of our agreement, while I donate photos to them, they give me the rights to either have assignments or sell the photos as stock afterwards, which that's a big source of my revenue.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That makes sense.
And I've been on your website, and what is that website, before we go too far, Jeff? What's the name?
Well, I've got two different websites. You know, if people wanted to buy prints, it's iditarodphotos.net. If a company wants to hire me as a photographer, they would go to schultzphoto.com, which is where I have work. And then as the stock agency, we have alaskastock.com, which is where commercial buyers of photography would come, people wanting to do magazines or advertisements using just a myriad of Alaskan photography.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I'll put all three of those links on the website, the Sled Dog Podcast show notes, so people can go to that and click on them, which is wonderful.
Okay, so what I want to know is give me one of your funniest moments during the Iditarod. Will that take too long to think of? Or
no, actually, funniest moments was... I was going from Rainy Pass to Rome River, which goes over Rainy Pass itself. You know, Rainy Pass checkpoint's about 15 miles from the pass. So I hired a guy to take me my snow machine over Rainy Pass. It's a real, in the Dalzell Gorge, it's kind of a treacherous area because there's ice bridges and stuff. So the guy with the snow machine, he kept going, dropped me off. I said, I'll just walk down and, you know, photograph as I go, waiting for teams here and there. Anyway, so a team comes by, I photograph it, it keeps going, so I start walking down the trail to get to another spot, and the teams are so quiet. I was walking along, and I look between my legs, and there's a lead dog coming right between my legs.
Oh, no.
And, you know, so I just jumped, you know, the musher thought I would have hurt him or something, but I didn't, so I just, you know, jumped off the trail, and he went by, and all's good. I thought that was
That is hilarious.
Yeah, and I'm glad you didn't ride him to him.
Oh, that is funny. Well, do you also run dogs at all?
Back in the day, when I first came up here and I met Joe Reddington Sr., I would run his dogs with him, but not for any other than just to help him out. He would take a team of 7 or 8 out. I'd take a team of 7 or 8 out, and being right behind him or right in front of him. So I've driven dogs, but that's not my passion. That's too much like work.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. And we
driving them is one thing. You know, running the dogs is one thing, but bringing them back and cleaning up after them and feeding them, that's just too much.
We know all about that.
Yes, we do. We've only got 20, but it all counts, right? It's a challenge. So what do you look for in your photography when you're taking pictures of folks or dogs or nature? What do you kind of look for?
Well, it's always been good or bad or just indifferent. Photos I typically take is trying to put a person or an animal into the landscape, into God's country. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the shots you'll see of mine are of a small person in a big landscape.
That's awesome.
And which is good up to a point, but also as a photographer and doing it commercially, people want to see the details. They want to see the up-close of the frosted-up musher's face. They want to see the details of how they cook food at a checkpoint and stuff like that. So that takes a little more work for me to do because I just don't see... I like the calendar-type photos, the postcard picture.
Hmm. Sure.
Kind of signature shot.
That is great. Do you have any challenges during the Iditarod as far as any major things that are... I guess we always hear about the vets, or you hear about obviously the mushers, and you even hear about the volunteers that are doing things, but you never hear, you know, about the photographers and or the videographers that are out there, you know, battling the elements and so forth. So tell us about all that.
Well, yeah, those guys, myself included, all those guys that are out videotaping, they're not riding the runners of the sled, but they're trying to get to those spots where nobody else can get to. So they're hiking for miles, they're waiting for long periods of time in sub-zero temperatures, they're getting up in the middle of the night to get just the musher coming into the checkpoint at the right time. So there's a lot of work to that. It's exciting to be able to come back at the end of the race and tell people, well, I ran a snow machine, you know, 15 miles, and the last 2 miles was a blizzard. You know, that type of thing is kind of fun to do. But you also have to be careful out there because just as easily your snow machine could break down in the middle and you'd be walking.
Yeah. Or a dog could show up between your legs, one of the two.
Right. Yeah. So it's, I've always talked about it as it's photographing the Iditarod really to do it right. It's kind of a logistical nightmare because you're trying to get to the spots before the mushers get there and it takes a lot of work, and you need a good pilot. I've got a great pilot for the last 7-8 years in Danny Davidson, and another one before that, Sam Maxwell, that just loves to fly and loves to put me in those positions. And, you know, the talent they have, I couldn't do it without those guys, because getting to those places and landing safely, it's a big deal.
Do you do a lot from the air?
Yeah, we do quite a few aerials. Less and less these days. Just because it's a bigger plane, but just landing between checkpoints, you know, that's what I'm all about. I want to get out there and get in the middle of things and not just shoot the checkpoints because that gets old real quick. Mushers do the exact same thing at every single checkpoint. So, yeah.
Now, do you need a vacation after the Iditarod? Do you come home just as whipped?
Oh, yeah. We're working from usually 7 in the morning till even earlier some days. But more like 6 in the morning till 9 or 10 at night, because nowadays everything's digital. So we're downloading stuff at night and editing it and shipping it up to the different websites. I photographed for Cabela's the last few years and hope that continues. So their websites are fresh all the time with new images. So yeah, we're pretty wiped out at the end of the race.
So how do you have connections out there? Do the checkpoints have connections so you can upload, or do you do satellite, or what do you do?
Yeah, a few years ago it was satellite, but nowadays all the schools, for the most part, are hooked up to either wireless internet or a wired internet. So at the end of the day, we end up at some checkpoint or another. Even some of the remote checkpoints, it's nice that the local sponsor up here for telecommunications, GCI, oftentimes we'll have a satellite out there for people to use.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful.
It gets better and better all the time.
Okay, do you have a favorite musher person that you like to photograph?
Yeah, that's the neat thing. All the mushers are my friends, and I don't really care who wins. It was great to see Lance Mackey win this year because he deserved it, and also because it was somebody fresh. I mean, he's just the perfect champion. Because he's so excited about it. It's not like old hat, like, yeah,
right.
I figured I could do this. So for me, I'd just like to see someone new win every year. But other than that, I wish them all Godspeed that they just get to know them safe.
Well, and what's awesome is Lance was not shy as far as giving you guys things to photograph either.
That's right.
No, he was a pretty good ham. But yeah. He wasn't a ham. He was genuine.
Genuinely happy. thrilled, right?
Generally ecstatic, real tears.
Yeah.
That was really great.
I think, you know, we're sitting here in northern Michigan watching on the internet as we're doing it, or as he's coming in and so forth, and we're seeing him and his family and the next day and so forth, and we're all giddy. I mean, we are just, you know, I don't know how to explain it when you have such a love for the sport, but even though we're, I don't know, 4,000, 3,000 miles away, we're still just excited for him and for everybody that's there, which is fantastic.
And yeah, everybody just plain loved it. Yeah.
You know, I want to go back. You said that you kind of go from checkpoint to checkpoint. Do you usually stay with the leaders, or are there other photographers that hang back with the people in the back at all?
I try not to stay with the leaders until I have to, which ends up being, you know, once they reach the coast, you kind of have to in order to make sure you're ahead of them to be a gnome. But no, I go back and forth. This last year, I know I spent two nights in Nikolai, and then we flew back and forth out of there. One year, I spent three nights in Takadna, got there for the leaders, and then flew out the next day to go back into the pack, and just back and forth. So I try to get everybody. The problem is it doesn't take more than, like, maybe 2 days, 3 days, once they're into Rhone and that, and they're just spread out over hundreds of miles. And so trying to shoot everybody is just impossible. That point, because you can't land everywhere, they're just, you know, impossible places, and you'd have to wait too long for everybody to come by.
Days in some points, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, we definitely photograph all the mushers when they leave Anchorage, when they leave the restart, and try to get as many as we can coming to the Finger Lake and stuff like that on that Sunday morning or Monday morning. But my idea is to get to unique places in the race. You know, every year weather's somewhat different and trail conditions are somewhat different, so if there's a treacherous spot like open water, I'll try to get there, and I don't care who comes through, you know,
right,
the leader or somebody else. So just getting to the unique spots is what I try to do, and cover all of them, go to all the checkpoints.
Now, are you usually a team together? Are you by yourself, or like, is there a video person with you, or do you?
I'm just by myself.
Okay.
Well, so now what, do you have a favorite shot that you've done of the Iditarod in all these years?
Well, actually, I'm staring at my favorite shot now, and it's my favorite not only because it sells a whole lot, but also because it's one of those small person, big landscape. It's a picture of Diana Maroney going through just about 2 miles past Rainy Pass.
Okay.
We snow machined up there, and then it's probably a quarter mile hike up the hill and waited there until a musher came by. And it, you know, we probably waited up there an hour or so. And it's just one of those neat shots because the trail's real narrow. There's big mountains in the background. There's a cliff right in front of me. And I'm looking almost, not straight down, but close to it with her. So that's my favorite shot of the whole race.
Wow.
Now, is that shot, and obviously you have other ones on Alaska Stock in your web pages. Is that shot on the web page that people could go look at?
Yeah, it is. You probably, her name when it was photographed was Diana Dronenberg, so you'd have to do a search for Diana Dronenberg in Rainy Pass or something like that, and that one will show up.
Oh, fantastic. It's
been on the cover of Alaska Magazine, Alaska Airlines Magazine, many posters, a book, just lots of different places.
Right.
Well, we've talked about, obviously, the Iditarod, and we talked about a lot of the I'm sure you shoot a lot of pictures of the dogs on the Iditarod. Do you like to shoot other animals also? I saw on Alaska Stock there were just some incredible, and we got to ask you, were the three grizzly bears really sitting there together for whoever took the picture?
I'm not sure which one you're referring to, but probably, but not sure what. But I don't do as much wildlife photography as the photographers we represent. I used to back in the day. But there's guys that do it a whole lot better and have a whole lot more patience than I do. So the type of photography I typically do is outdoor recreation and outdoor adventure, hiking, backpacking, fishing, mountaineering, cross-country skiing, and also tourism shots, because I try to photograph the stuff that our photographers that we represent are not photographing.
Oh, that's a good idea. Well, is there any tips that you'd have for amateur photographers or even people that are, you know, think of themselves as pretty good, that take pictures? I know every race that we go to, we're taking pictures and so forth. Any tips? Other than I like your idea of shooting back from the pictures a little bit and more of the scenery and taking it in.
Well, if just a couple quick ones, and because people ask me some similar questions all the time. And the first one is, how do you keep your cameras warm when it's so cold?
Yeah.
And what do you do with them at night? So two things there. One is that you want to keep the battery, you want to keep fresh batteries. So always have at least three batteries with you, one in the camera and two in your pocket warming up. Because once they die or stop working in the cold, they're not dead necessarily. They just need to get warmed up again. So I keep hand warmers in my pocket, warm up the batteries. When the battery I just put in dies, I just switch them out. So that's a key one. Most people already know that, but some keep wondering, how come my battery keeps dying? And there's no need to replace it. It's just, it's not dead. It just needs to warm up.
And you're shooting mainly digital, correct?
Right.
Do you do a lot of CF cards and a lot of cards with you to take those pictures, or do you just...
Yeah, I'm shooting in RAW format. So I'm shooting usually 4 gigabyte cards, and I probably have 10 4-gigabyte cards with me.
Wow.
And even that I have to sometimes download during the middle of the day.
Wow.
But those are real high resolution stuff, so people can make posters and billboards and stuff out of them.
Oh, absolutely.
A person doesn't really need that high of resolution.
Well, you know, and I noticed on Amazon and some other places that you've got quite a few books. How many books have you put out now?
I haven't published any myself, but there's 6 books on the Iditarod of mine out there now. I've written only one of them. The rest are someone else has written, and I've provided the photography for it.
Oh, they are fantastic, too. I see them on the Amazon. They let you go through 6 or 7 pages, and it's like, okay, honey, I want to get this book, and I want to get this book, and I want to get this book. So, which is fun. And the one that you wrote, did you write it yourself, or did you have some help putting it together?
I'm glad you asked that, because it's pretty funny. I wrote the book, did all the research, thought I did a great job, and I sent it to the book publisher, who they wanted me to write it, because I had the relationship with Mushers and all that. It's called Dogs of the Iditarod. But once I sent it in to them, she kind of chuckled and said, "This is good information, Jeff, but it's not from a writer." So she rewrote it. Basically, more or less, the editor did that.
Oh,
tweak.
Humbling experience, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It was good.
Oh, that's wonderful.
What's the name of that book?
It's called Dogs of the Iditarod.
Dogs, we've seen that book.
Sasquatch.
Absolutely.
Books.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, besides going to your webpage and seeing this, is there anything you'd like to tell people that are listening to the show at all?
No, I just hope they continue to support the Iditarod. It's a unique event. I never call it a race, because to me and most Alaskans, it's an event. Most people don't care who gets to know them. They're just out there to help the dogs get there safely and to enjoy an adventure and experience in God's country. So I'd invite people to come up. And a lot of people think they have to kind of figure out an expedition in order to come to Alaska. But all it takes is a plane ticket and a rental car and maybe some other flights here and there. There's some great opportunities to go out and really experience the race firsthand. So I encourage them to do that.
Well, Jeff, this has been...
To.
Yeah, we're up as soon as we can. Hey, well, thank you so much. This has been absolutely wonderful.
All right. Thanks so much.
Wow, that was a fantastic interview, wasn't it? He just brings to light the passion and the heart of a photographer. But what got me so... I guess stirred up inside was when I started talking to him. I've always forgot about what the photographer goes through along the trail.
Sure.
To be out there for 15 days.
Oh, yeah. Like I said in the interview, he needs a vacation just as much after the Iditarod as those mushers.
Oh, it was amazing.
So.
It was amazing. So please go out to his websites, theiditarodphoto.net and schultzphoto.com and alaskastock.com. And take a look at his photos. And if you want those links, you can go ahead to our webpage at sleddogpodcast.com. And again, the shout out for anybody that wants to be part of the podcast, whether you want to publicize or promote any of your equipment. If you're an equipment manufacturer or a dog food manufacturer, we'd love to hear from you. I'm going to ask you some questions about why is your equipment or why is your food better. But more importantly, you should be able to help the community hear and know more about what is being offered out there instead of just going from magazine to magazine looking for things.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much. Again, go to sleddogpodcast.com or email us and let us know what you think.
This is the podcast that educates, entertains, and excites you about dog sledding. See ya!